Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. The story begins in 1973 in the offices of the Atlantic Monthly. A young freelance writer named Tracy Kidder came looking for an assignment. Richard Todd was the editor who encouraged him. From that article grew a lifelong association. Before long, Kidder's The Soul of a New Machine, the first book the two worked on together, had won the Pulitzer Prize. It was the beginning of an education in the art of nonfiction. The two have joined together and have written the new book, Good Prose, The Art of Nonfiction, which explores three major nonfiction forms, narratives, essays, and memoirs. They offer some tart and emphatic opinions on the current state of language, and they take a clear stand against playing loose with the facts. Their advice is always grounded in the practical world of writing and publishing. Good Prose is an authoritative and entertaining guide of standards for writing, offering guidance for the professional writer and the beginner alike. Again, Good Prose, The Art of Nonfiction, Stories and Advice from a Lifetime of Writing and Editing. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Tracy Kidder and Richard Todd to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be back.
It is wonderful to have you back. I have to say, when I started to read this book, the first thing that came to mind was a very procedural question of how difficult it must be to write about writing.
Well, I'd been a book critic for a while, and so it came, I suppose, a little more naturally to me. Tracy, I think, was a little superstitious about it. If you write about it too much, maybe you're not going to do it. But
yeah. I also think that, you know, when you write about writing, you take a piece of writing, basically, and you divide it up into various categories. You know, you talk about its tone or its structure and so on. But the truth is, of course, that you don't really write that way. Those terms and that kind of analysis is very useful for the autopsy of a draft of a piece of writing. But I don't know. It seemed artificial to me. But as we got into this, it got to be more fun. For one thing, I was getting to exact a little revenge on my editor of 40 years by editing him. And for another, I began to realize that we really had learned some things in 40 years. This point was brought home very forcefully to me the other night when I actually did something I almost never do, which was to reread a book I'd published long, long time ago, that book, The Soul of a New Machine. I was doing it, for a legitimate purpose because of something that I'm beginning to work on now. I was quite distressed to discover that in the prose, I mean, I think it's probably a pretty good book, but others thought so anyway. But in the prose, I make any number of mistakes that we decry in good prose. So I hope I've learned something. It is kind of too bad that those things sit there anyway.
But it won the Pulitzer, Tracy. I mean, it's not like it's something to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed. I just chagrined that. Yeah. Never mind.
When you look back, I guess, that shows not only the growth and the progress of a writer, but also of a relationship between a writer and an editor, I would assume.
Yeah, Tracy hasn't shown me those things that embarrassed him. Presumably I'll be equally disturbed since I should have caught them.
Exactly.
Yes, right enough. Yes, I will be made to know that, believe me.
One of the things I think that makes this book a little different from most books about writing is that we draw largely, I mean, there's a lot of theory in this book, but we have these pieces of it. Pieces of it are written in our individual first-person voices. And those are really stories about how we did this work together. And they're the kinds of stories from which we try to draw our general observations, our advice. I hope we're not, you know, too didactic in giving our advice, but these really are drawn from our experiences as a writer and an editor, and those have been a large part of my life for 40 years, what we've done together. So I think, as we say in the introduction to this is really the things that we have learned are in themselves the story of a collaboration and a friendship.
Richard, for you as an editor, give us a sense of what it was like when you first met Tracy, of realizing, was it an instant that you say, okay, this is someone, A, that I can work with, and B, that has talent that can definitely be shaped in some way, shape, or form.
Tracy kindly laughs to save me an awkward answer. It was not immediately clear to either of us where this enterprise was going, I must say.
In the book, your initial reaction was not positive to the first work that you saw of his.
Well, it was positive. It must have been positive to something because, you know, I did say no to people, and there Tracy was irrepressibly eager to write something, but not just eager, willing to work. And that's a big thing in a writer and a writer presenting himself to you. And so as long as he's willing to keep going, I thought, well, who knows what's going to happen here? And by the time that anything did happen, we'd gotten to know each other and become friends.
That was an article that I was trying to write about a mass murder case in California, Joe, and I don't know how many drafts I wrote, but it was way over 20.
I don't have the first line in front of me, but the way you started on the
article. Yeah, it was something like in the fall or summer or something of, well, I forget the year even, someone went mad for blood in the Sacramento Valley. What I do remember clearly, I think it was our first conversation about the first draft of this thing was Todd's. I saying, well, what's wrong with the article? And he said, well, first of all, the first sentence. And he was right. It was melodramatic. It had that bossy quality of trying to tell a reader how to feel rather than supplying reasons for the reader to feel that a certain way. Amending the first sentence wasn't too hard. But the whole article, I mean, it just took forever for me to begin to figure out how to tell this little story. And, I mean, at a certain point, the head editor of The Atlantic, Bob Manning, said to Todd, let's face it, this fellow can't write. About me, speaking of me, Todd didn't tell me that for about 40 years because I think he finally thought the other day that I was stable enough to take it. But he, you know, and I do remember when I finally finished the article, I mean, it was finally accepted and Manning published it in the magazine in a little corner called Reports and Comment that he said to me that he was impressed with the work that had gone into it. He didn't say he was impressed with the article. And I think it wasn't unkind. It was just accurate. But it was the beginning of something, you know, and I do think talent, of course, exists, but I've known a lot of writers who had enormous talent who couldn't do it because they couldn't rewrite. They couldn't do the work.
It should be said that you were basically, as a young writer, it was suggested to you that you should go to The Atlantic and seek Richard Todd in the sense that it was felt a good pairing of the two of you.
Well, I was at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and a man named Dan Wakefield, who was a distinguished journalist, had turned novelist before he came out there, helped me get in the door of The Atlantic to try to write this piece. And he said, well, when you get there, there's a smart young editor. Dick Todd, you should try to work with him. It was that simple.
So that to me, and this is what I find fascinating about the book, is the development of a relationship. Having talked to many, many writers about the relationship between a writer and an editor, it is often been described to me as that of a marriage of both when it works and also when it doesn't, of losing an editor after a long period of time and writers likening that to a divorce. So I ask you, Tracy Kidder, and then I will ask Richard about this, but do you feel that as a writer there is a sense of trust that comes in with that relationship? When did you start to feel that?
Well, when that, I mean, I guess really from the beginning. I mean, it was, it's partly a relationship of power. He had the power to, it seemed to me, he represented the power of publication or rejection. So that's where it starts. But there's a great deal more, of course, involved. And it wasn't at first, I guess, trust so much, but heck, that piece got published. So maybe that's where trust begins. But again, it is much more than that. I think that my sense of what it takes to be a good editor is, at a minimum, is that modicum of selflessness that allows a person to work in the best interests of another person's creations. It's not all that common, I don't think. But also, you know, a kind of discernment. A person who really does wish you well, and I mean, it's choosing this other set of eyes. It does depend entirely on trust. Over the years, I've come to trust him. Now, there were times when I used to think that he was making me cut stuff that he shouldn't have made me cut, and I was going to collect this long list of all the good stuff I called it, but I didn't get very far with that before I realized that, no, he was right. Most of those things should have been cut.
And I want to get into that in a second. But Richard, when you look at working with someone like Tracy, where you realize that, yes, he called a power, but your role is to make him a better writer and to communicate to us, the reader, in a better fashion.
I think that writers, and there is a little bit of mystery in this relationship. I know certainly that I'm not as good an editor for everybody as I am for Tracy, probably. I mean, I think writers and editors do tend to find ways in which they just happen to be able to work well together. Tracy has an additional gift, which is to make himself available to editing early in the game, which makes a huge difference often, and to listen to, I mean, to suggestions. That's not a universal quality among writers who often will keep you away until they've got something that they love and then give it to you when it's a little hard to make change, hard for everybody to make changes. So we got into, happily, we just got into a way of working together that allowed me to be a participant early in the game and to have a hand in shaping things while they could be shaped.
Another way of saying that, a less kindly way, would be to say that I needed editing more than a lot of people probably do.
When you send a piece in, do you know sometimes of what is going to be altered in some way? Do you know that
with
going
him,
in?
With Dick?
Yes.
Yeah, sometimes I, you know,
it seems like at some point it would almost be like you're playing a game of, can I get this by?
A little bit, Joe. I think not so much anymore. The attempt to get something there that works becomes so exhausting that, you know, at a certain point you're willing to sacrifice almost anything to do it. And if you got this other set of eyes, I remember this really smart guy, Bill Whitworth, saying to me, every writer needs another set of eyes. And if you trust them, then you just trust them. I mean, you've got to. The thing is, it is very hard when you're a young writer, and it's hard even now for me to accept criticism, which almost always invariably falls on the things that you think were best in what you wrote. And there's a reason for that, I suspect. You get protective about the stuff that you really kind of know deep down is not very good, or that you worked really hard on, that you were laboring over, and it still feels labored. So I can often predict that he won't like something that I think is particularly good. But that's not always the case.
There are things that you feel you should fight for, that there's lines that you like, that you're proud of, that you want to keep in, that Dick wants to take out.
I've almost always been wrong, I have to admit. Not always, but often wrong. And he's also persuadable once in a while. I remember the beginning of Mountains Beyond Mountains, which was, I think, probably the best crafted, most nicely crafted book I've written. I had an idea for a beginning. We're having a lot of trouble finding a beginning, which is often one of the last things one finds when writing a book. And he didn't like the idea that I proposed in concept. And I said, well, let me just write it. And I wrote it and gave it to him. And he said, I remember he said, well, I kind of like this. And we worked on it some more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it can work that way, but that's pretty rare, actually.
And when it's wrong, I mean, is there something in a book that you fought for and you look back and say, okay, well, that was wrong. He was right on that.
I don't think so. Nothing big. There are a few lines here and there, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are a few lines.
We talk about one about the hands as big as ottomans. Of a contractor's hands.
Yeah. I was saying that an ottoman of a hand, and he wanted me to cut it, and I refused to cut that. And I think I, at some point, realized I should have cut that.
Which brings up the question of how subjective is it? As you said, you would be a different editor for a different writer. So how much, for us as a reader, does that matter? Do we want to read what Tracy thinks is the line, and how much do we understand what your role in that is of reining that in?
Well, I hope you don't understand my role at all, you know, when you're reading the book. That would drive everybody a little nuts, I think, but second guessing. But of course it's subjective. That's what makes it interesting. All of these things are small choices, and one by one, I suppose, often arguable choices, but they add up to something that gives the book its shape and tone.
You know, Joe, there's a line in there about, you know, the hardest things to kill are not your darlings, as the saying goes.
Right.
the hardest things to kill are the things that are really are good, but that are getting in the way of the whole. And that happens. I mean, that happens a lot. So you have a particularly wonderful little story, little vignette, little scene, and you've written it, and you're just sure this belongs in the book, but it doesn't really fit, or it throws you off as a reader.
And that often is easier for an editor to, if not to see, to admit, you know, and to and to sort of press for.
Yeah. But also, you know, going back to the subjectivity, as we write in this book, you know, that properly understood, that term is just another name for thought.
Rewriting for you is pleasurable?
Yes. Up to a point. what I find difficult is writing rough drafts. And I write them really fast, as fast as I can. I like to say, to prevent remorse for having written badly. And then I start over again. And partly it's because I guess I'm basically pretty gregarious. Then I can start really bugging him pretty much every day. You know, I have this company to keep once I start rewriting. Also, there is a great delight that comes, and I usually write about 10 drafts, you know, successive approximations like golf shots, you know. There's a great delight that comes as some form begins to emerge from this chaos that my notes generally represent. I take as many notes as I possibly can. And I really do believe that for me, and no one else probably does it this way. I don't know if anyone does, but as I discover the story, I'm mostly a storyteller. I discover my stories as I write them and rewrite them particularly. What's big? What as Todd liked to say, one of the most important lines he ever delivered was the whole art of this is making some things big and other things little. You know, that's just a question of, you know, how much do you give to this and how much to that? And, what is at the heart of this story? What one incident could stand for 20 others that you witnessed? It, I don't know. It's complicated, but it's really fun if it starts to work. And it's very, very frustrating when it isn't working.
How much, Dick, do you have of even in brainstorming ideas? Because Tracy's topics are often, at least at the beginning, were very simplistic in the sense of a house and a car and a machine. Of what was your input in those initial ideas?
Tracy has been quickly always drawn to character. And so character is the engine of all of his books. It's happened that they've had subjects that have been timely, but it's the people involved in him that gives him his momentum and gives the books their momentum. And so we talk about moments, you know, and what the moments represented and what is it that interests him here? What do we think was going on in this situation? That's the sort of thing we...
For me, it is usually characters. And then, of course, I get interested in the subjects that preoccupy those people. But that usually start with a person or a group of people.
You address in the book, as I mentioned in the introduction, exploring narratives and essays and memoir. And you came to memoir. It seems in your career that it was eventual.
It was eventual. What happened was, for years, had these memories of Vietnam, which had troubled me. They were not dramatic, believe me. I was not in combat. The memories kind of... So haunted would be too strong a word, but they bothered me, embarrassed me. At some point, I started to write this memoir called, and I had the title right away, My Detachment. I commanded a detachment of men. It was called a detachment, but I also meant all other possible meanings. But I had to put it away. I put it away several times over a period of about 15 years because I couldn't find the right way to, right place to stand to tell this story. I kept trying to disown this young lieutenant that I had been, you know, as if we had never been related. It took time to get there. Every time I put these things away, I would turn around and, to everyone who cared to listen, denounce the whole impulse to write memoirs, you know. But I was making an exception for myself. Ultimately, Todd, it was mostly Todd, though. He was so amused by some of these stories of mine because they gave him such good material to tease me with it. He kept.
it's
he would remind
funny
me
book.
About it. He would remind me.
But there was an encouragement on your part to say, "Let's go with
yeah.
this."
Yeah, but it happened slowly.
One of the things I should say about just his editing, because we've kind of passed this by, is that he has a light hand. He doesn't believe in writing it for you, though he has supplied me with some lines in conversation. He seems to think there's some mystical difference between actually writing out a line that he's handing me and saying something in conversation that I write down and use. But also, you know, what one of the things that really is crucial for a person like me, I think a lot of writers are insecure, and I have been insecure in my time, probably now, but not as insecure. You have to have a light touch, because all writing, even classic works, can be ridiculed. They're easy to ridicule. And it's so much the worse for this nascent stuff, for tender shoots, for something new. And Todd can manage to be encouraging and honest at the same time. Even if, you know, you've just handed him a dreadful piece of writing, he can see the promise in it. That's pretty rare. And that's part of the trust that's absolutely necessary. Because then I can give him early drafts without being stomped on.
And you've written this book together. So was it a tap on the shoulder at some point to realize that not only was he a good editor, but he's also a good writer?
Yeah, he is a good writer. Probably shouldn't say that on the air, but yeah, he is a good writer. He's a funny writer. But he has his problems as a writer. And, you know, I have done a little editing, Joe. The proudest piece of editing was Jonathan Haar's A Civil Action, which I did a lot of editing on. So I was accustomed to doing a little editing with a good writer, but Todd has some of the same problems that Jonathan Haar has as a writer. He's kind of a lazy writer.
You're terrible at being edited.
At being edited, yes. I don't.
Yeah, he's not good at it.
I don't like it at all. I resist every step of the way, and I like to deliver something that's perfect, you know, before I let anybody else. I do everything that we advise against doing.
Yeah, he's difficult, but you know, it takes a while to learn how to be edited, and he's pretty much a naive.
I will say that Tracy has not exactly a light hand himself. I gave him a copy of my first book in manuscript to read, and I make little light penciled marks occasionally on the side of a page.
Well, that's because your penmanship's so
bad. My penmanship's not good. And I got this thing back in Tracy's bold, all too legible hand all across. The most vivid remarks, unfortunately, are not quotable in this situation. But so, you know, that was a learning experience.
And when do you let it go? When, from the moment of the initial shock of the verbal attack, if you will, of then saying, okay, this is now how I'm going to change it?
I think you sit on it for a little bit, and then you let the wisdom sink in. Part of being edited, certainly, is learning to reject advice. I reject it. I think a fair amount of Tracy's.
Yeah, well.
but perhaps not to my, to my ultimate good. Who knows? But I mean, seriously, that is you need an editor. You need to trust an editor, but you also need to know when to push back. Talk about subjectivity.
So much the better if you really trust your editor, as he doesn't trust me as an editor.
Well, I'm getting there.
You both give wonderful advice in this book, but you can't read it and not think about a young writer today. Do they have access to someone like Richard Todd? Is a relationship allowed to build the way that your relationship was allowed to build?
Well, I think these things happen, and they're always a little unusual. It's true that structurally, publishing has come to work against this situation a little bit, but I wouldn't want to say that it doesn't exist. I mean, there are editors who spend a great deal of time with writers still.
Yeah, I don't really know, Joe. You know, I've sort of been out of that part of the game. I have my arrangements. And when young writers do ask me, what should I do? I usually end up with some kind of wimpy advice saying, well, do a lot of reading, do a lot of writing, and if it's really good, you'll get it published. But I just don't really understand what's happening with publishing. I'm not sure most publishers do either. Everything seems to be in flux. And I do think that editors aren't generally rewarded as much for actually editing as for, the things that seem more to have more to do with business, which is a shame since most editors are English majors after all. Those damn MBAs who come in, you know, and wreck everything. Actually, that's true sometimes, by the way.
The name of the book is Good Prose, The Art of Nonfiction, Stories and Advice from a Lifetime of Writing and Editing. It is published by Random House. Tracy Kidder and Richard Todd, what a great pleasure to speak to you both. I thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Again, the name of the book is Good Prose, The Art of Nonfiction, published by Random House. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.